Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
First of all, how many folks here in the room don't know about Jelly Belly or don't have a Jelly Belly story? Raise your hand right now. I want to identify anybody that's never heard of the product. And there's no truth to the rumor that you knew that there was going to be free candy here tonight, so that's the reason you're here, right? Everybody has what's amazing about our brand is that logo and the unique relationship it has with so many people. There's so many fans of Jelly Belly. Everybody's got a Jelly Belly story. Wherever I travel all over the world, they see that logo, and they're compelled to go up to you and engage you in a conversation. And it never fails. And as much as I live it every day, it always feels great. I mean, how many people can work at a job, to have fun like I do, and be recognized for a product that brings smiles on so many faces? So, it's a privilege. Today, I just want to briefly talk about our company's history. I think it's a great story to tell. The Golitz family is in its sixth generation, because Herm has grandkids that now work in the business. So there's a fun story there, a little bit about the company today, something about our industry, and then get into really what you want to all hear about, and that is what makes this brand so unique and different in product innovation and in the marketing, and how we built that brand and sustain it over the years and grow it. So, and then I'll be happy to entertain any questions. From the beginning, this is Gustav Golitz, immigrant from Austria. He and his brother Albert started the company in 1869. And so we go way back, that many generations, and these were some of the first stores. But Gustav made the candy and Albert sold it out of a horse-drawn wagon. So that's how far back we go. Later on, in the early 1900s, sons of Gustav, Herman and Adolf, took up the family business once again and started off on their own. This happens to be in Bellevue, Illinois, one of the first plants there. And these are some great pictures to look at, because it talks about the roots that we have going back. And you'll find that the candy industry is very unique. If you think of brands like Hershey and Mars, I mean, Forrest Mars is a real person. He started that. They're family-owned and operated businesses. So it's a very unique industry when you look at it from a family-owned and operated perspective. This happens to be a picture of our plant in North Chicago in 1914. And it started in 1914 and kind of got added on. But as the two brothers did their built their own businesses, one moved out. And so Adolf was the one that moved out west, Adolf's brother Herman is the one that moved out west and started the plant actually in Portland. But by 1925, they outgrew the Portland facility and moved to Chicago. So we had two families started in the business, and what's interesting about that is they were reunited down the road, and I'll explain a little bit more about that in just a second. But that's early beginnings in Oakland, and back then we made candy corn. Now, in your bags, you all have candy. This is real gourmet candy corn. We did not invent candy corn, but we perfected it. And it really, if you've not tasted true, what we call butter creams, this is a difference. It's made with fondant, and you need to taste it. It's expensive to make it this way today, so you don't see it. It's not grainy. It has a very smooth texture and bite, and it's just full of flavor. That's the product that that sustained the company for all those beginning years. There weren't any more than 10 employees at either plant from the early 1900s until the late 1960s. So just to give you an idea, it was a seasonal product, and that's how the product was built. And they used to call them butter creams. And what's important about that and some of the machinery that made candy corn way back then is that's what kind of took us to a point where later on, Herm Roland, the CEO, and I'll put a picture of Herm up, but the family that runs and owns the business today was working in the plant 13 years old at his grandfather's side and his father's side as early as 13, but 19 years old, saying, we can't survive. We can't just go season to season and survive. We've got to start making other types of candy. So they got into more of a diversified candy selection. They started making other things like gummies and panned mints and chocolate panned items and some other confections, licorice items that sort of broaden their product line and made them a little less seasonal, but it was very competitive. But they needed some funding, and what was interesting about that period of time, and they started making jelly beans back then too, but what was interesting is they wanted to expand their plant in Oakland. They went to the bank, and the bank told Herm, my boss, said, I have a piece of advice for you. You should sell all your assets and get out of the business because you don't have a chance to be successful. Well, to Herm, those were fighting words. And that's a very important to understand because that made him more determined than ever. And if you ever met him, you would see that determination and how it has manifested itself today. That's really what drives him. And people say that he's passionate or obsessed, but it's even beyond that. It's at a different level. It's personal. So back in 1976, a distributor of ours came to us with this idea of a gourmet jelly bean. And we were making jelly beans, and we made really good jelly beans, but he had an idea. He said, you need to make them with real flavor, and they have to be intense. And they have to be have that wow factor when you bite it. You go, how do you do that? I mean, that's real, true-to-life flavor. And we can sell them for, back then, it was like $4 or $5 a pound. Heard of. These were jelly beans that were selling for, 70 cents a pound. And he came with this idea. These are the original 8 flavors, from berry, cherry, lemon, grape, green apple, tangerine, cream soda, licorice, and root beer. Those are the original 8. This is the first distributor who actually built a merchandising cart and went out on the streets in Los Angeles to peddle them. Okay? But it wasn't until the famous Ronald Reagan that the news broke about him being the biggest fan of Jelly Belly. And there's a little bit of a story there. When he was governor of California, we were giving him jelly beans, and he loved them. And Nancy loved us to do that because he was trying to quit smoking a pipe. That's how we met him at a cocktail party, started sending him beans, and he fell in love with our jelly beans. True, that's how that all happened. Later on, when Time Magazine broke the story on the campaign trail when he was running for president in 1980 that he wouldn't go anywhere and meet with anybody unless he had his jar of jelly beans to share with everybody. And what were those? Well, we had a relationship with him, and we were providing him with jelly bellies all that time, but couldn't divulge the fact that we were the company that made those jelly beans. So they, short story, they ran to the factory in Oakland, and there were two news crews, and then suddenly three or four, and Herm was frantic on a weekend and called the White House and said, I can't even go outside here. There's people here, and you told me that I couldn't tell the story. Don't forget about it. They're going to find out anyway. Tell them that Jelly Bellies are the favorite candy of the president, and that's what happened. And so this is a picture of Herm and his cousin Bill in the Oval Office with President Reagan, and I believe this is about 1981. So we became the official gift of the White House for the next 8 years. You can't buy marketing like that. It just doesn't exist. We're only in America, right? The official, so any dignitary, any state dinner or official function of the White House as a gift from the White House to whoever was there was our jar of Jelly Bellies. And that was a pretty good coup. I don't even know how many millions of pounds we shipped over those 8 years, but there wasn't a person that went to the White House that didn't know about this and didn't expect it. And so it was a fun story. And the PR that came along with those days. Nancy, and this special cradle right there, that's on Marine One, and it went everywhere. And we have pictures. You have to imagine that as famous as we were in the White House photographer and the chief of staff, everybody in the White House at those days was a big fan of ours. So whenever they could find a photo opportunity, they would make sure that the Jelly Bellies were included in the shot, and these were some of those. This is flying over the Statue of Liberty, but we were everywhere that the president was, and those were, fantastic days, even in outer space. This is in 83, the Space Shuttle Discovery, the Sally Ride, and this is, you talk about PR, you can imagine, live, three networks live, and I don't think there wasn't a CNN back then, three live networks, with President Reagan on the television, and he tells them as they're beaming their photos back to Earth, I have a special surprise for you. Reach under the seat there, and there's a bag that I've got there for you. And they open the bag, and it fills the cabin up with Jelly Bellies. One of the most famous, and we have a photo in our office where each of the astronauts signed their name to it, and it's really a treasure for us, but where else can you get PR like that? We were in cover of People magazine. This is Herm standing in a sea of beans, and to leverage that PR, what do you think happened with our sales? Did they take off? We were about 2 weeks behind in producing orders back in the early 1980s, 2 weeks behind. 2.5 months later, we were 77 weeks behind in being able to fill orders and still taking orders, and we had to stop taking them. A year and a half's worth of business, and it was incredible. And people were trying to buy their way, and we'll pay anything. It didn't matter. It just didn't matter. So you talk about creating a demand for your product. I think having the PR that we got and the fact that it was a totally unique product. This is People magazine, but we had plenty of other opportunities because the product just really resonated with everybody. We had instant fans everywhere, and everybody wanted the president's candy. Back at home, we outgrew our building, obviously, with all that growth, and we were undersized, so we started on a growth period. We built in Fairfield. This is our campus today, a picture of the visitor center and our factory and some of our other buildings on campus, some of the facilities we have. This is Herm and his kids today. This is myself and these five are the board of directors. It's pretty simple. And Herm Jr. and his son Chris and Lisa on the left side and his daughter Becky. And they're all involved in the business today. They're we all work very closely together, and they're just a great family to work for and with. And this is a picture of Herm recently taken. He's the one that wanted to make that banker eat his words. So I think he's done a pretty good job at that. We opened our expansion took us to Chicago, where we needed a larger warehouse facility in 2001. We built this 235,000 square foot facility. We had a grand opening at a warehouse. And there's a story there. I'll wait till later to say. It's amazing the power of Jelly Belly, what you can do. And right now we're under construction in Rayong, which I'll speak to again about the strategy of our global expansion plans. So in facilities, we have about 900,000 square feet of space operating in Fairfield, North Chicago, Pleasant Prairie, and now in Rayong. And today we have 725 employees. Back in the days before Jelly Belly, there were 10. So you can see, and that was in 76. So the success of Jelly Belly has really been most recent. It hasn't been since the beginning of time. Operations, we have 8 stores now, 2 visitor centers in Fairfield and in Pleasant Prairie. And we've got 6 stores in the Sacramento area at outlet malls in Vacaville and recently at the Nut Tree, we just opened a store. And it's all filled with just Jelly Belly brands, all of our candy, and everything there is Jelly Belly related. And we're having some great success. That's a good way to extend your brand. We'll talk a little bit more about that. This is a picture of our opening in Roseville, and we had a great crowd. We bring all of our toys and stuff and made a big event of it. And it just continues to give us the positive feedback that this is a retail component of ours, that wherever Jelly Belly is, there are fans, and they will come and support it, and it's happening. Just a shot inside. Happy days. This is the visitor center, so many of you have been there. But what's important to understand about the visitor center today is that it happened out of a basic need. We ran out of space as people used to gather at Jelly Belly. They used to come through the office at the front, and the word grew, and so we had to put in porta-potties and toilets, and finally we had to build a building to support everybody. And this is our visitor center in Fairfield, and this is the one in Pleasant Prairie. And you'll see this train, and there's a story there with the big bean saying, it's a warehouse, it's not a factory. We're having people come and take a tour of a warehouse. And this is when I first came onto the scene. And I said to Herm, I said, you want to put a tour in the warehouse? He said, yeah, we'll get video screens up, and we'll get a train, a tram, with the color, and we'll put some things around it, and you'll see. They'll come. We'll put a little candy store there. Oh my God, this guy's, you know, he's gone off the deep edge. So our grand opening, we had 50,000 people in 2 weeks come to our warehouse, and we couldn't even take the tram around. We had to walk them around on the tours because we had so many people. But a year later, 250,000 people show up, and still today, 250,000 people come to Pleasant Prairie at the warehouse to take the tour. And we've made it a very special tour now. It's a great audiovisual presentation, but it's still a warehouse. Okay. Just some brief stuff about the candy industry I thought you would find interesting and help set the stage for when we talk about how we develop products. Cadbury Schweppes is the biggest global company at $10.5 billion. You can see that it's a pretty good size industry. It's projected to be $107 billion by the year 2010. There's some big players in here: Cadbury, Schweppes, Nestle's, Mars, Ferrero, Hershey's, and Wrigley, which are brands that you all recognize. They're sizable business on a global basis. And Jelly Belly ranks 54th, but we appear to be much bigger than we actually are, right? And that's the secret. We don't give out our figures, but it's been reported that we're around $150 million. That's not too far off, but we're on a very fast growth trend, and I'll show you why. This was sales from last year as reported from the $29 billion business, about 7.4 billion pounds sold at retail. And you can see a fairly steady growth there, not extravagant, but people enjoy sweets, as we all know, not just during the holidays, but every day. And it's a very indulgent product. So again, it's sold everywhere. Supermarkets are probably the leaders of this, but convenience food and drug, mass stores, but other, I want you to pay attention to this last little bar there. It represents $7 billion worth of sales here in the U.S. That's where you find candy. It's just about everywhere, and that's the beauty of what our brand represents and how we sell it, because we're not specific to a class of trade. You can find us from Harrods in London to the corner gas station and every place in between, and that's how we have grown, and that's how we'll continue to grow. Candy, and it's a big category. What people don't realize is that you've got beverages and milk, but in the food industry, in total, snacks represent the largest category of sales. And of salty snacks, cereal, ice cream, it's a big category. You think, oh, this is the gum or the candy at the front of the registers, but it's pretty powerful. It's the most frequently purchased item. That's helpful to know. And on a seasonal basis, one-third, a $6.2 billion business. And you can see that Christmas, in this case, Halloween and Easter play a big part of that. Magazines are the only category where it's a higher impulse purchase than candy. And I think you would all agree with that. Okay. So we're more than just jelly beans. We talked about all the different varieties of candy we make. We actually make 125 different varieties of candy today. And that's what you'll find when you go to the factory. And that surprises a lot of people. But Jelly Belly still is, these are some samples of the other confections that we make. But Jelly Belly is still 85% of our sales. One of the most innovative things that we've done is the way we name the beans when we first started, the fanciful names. If you where would you find toasted marshmallow or pink grapefruit or top banana? It was what added the gourmet, the essence of what gourmet products should taste like. But if it actually tasted like what it said, the descriptive term, then what a coup that would be. And so we take credit for some of those earlier names that you see every day now that are descriptive. But back then, bubblegum, cotton candy, I mean, sure, you had, you know, flavors like cinnamon, but we had sizzling cinnamon, right? And it really made a big difference. So that was very innovative back then. Jelly Belly is 85%, as I said. We sell 40 million pounds. We're sold in 2007, the end of our fiscal year. That's 16 billion Jelly Belly beans, 66 million beans a day, about 4.2 million beans an hour that we produce, and that's 70,000 a minute. And what's important to know about all that is that we actually print Jelly Belly on each and every one of those beans.
Our sales organization is divided up into these four areas. Specialty is how we got started. Specialty services all the classes of trade that are candy stores and gift shops and department stores and all the non-traditional places. That's where we got our start. Distribution across all of those classes of trade, we moved over into national, where we formed a broker network that calls on food, drug, mass convenience stores. And today we've added corporate accounts where we talk directly to our bigger customers like Costco, Walmart, Target, and so I've got four VPs in all those areas. We mentioned the fact that we're in 39 countries now, and we have a distributor network and direct retail accounts a part of that business. And these are our top accounts globally, Canada number one, followed by the UK, Germany, Austria, and Korea, the top five. How we differentiate and how we've been able to compete or be competitive in all these channels of distribution is key, and that's another area of innovation we've had to solve, because as you get more competitive, you can't sell the same product. You have to give somebody, each one of them, something uniquely different so they can compete. And in specialty, where we were born, is the more upscale look. So you look at the gold stripe. This is what's called our gold stripe bags and some of our gifting ideas, and we make sleeves that are different, and we do a good job of differentiating for those key classes of trade so they don't see the same product down the street at Walmart at a cheaper price. And we give them protection that way. So they have exclusive packaging just for their classes of trade. Another shot of some of the items, the gift boxes that we do that also have the gold stripe. This is a current design elements that we have out there in these classes of trade. So in the national, this is our logo that you'll see across all the food, drug, and mass stores and convenience stores, etc. And this is for specially designed for them. You can also find it at specialty, but you can't find the specialty products in food, drug, or mass. More shots of some of those product lines. We redesigned our entire graphics in 2002, and I think that just speaks to the key assets of what Jelly Belly is. It's the fun, the color, and the flavor, and the shape. Internationally, we take designs from our national side and adapt them to packaging for our international business. Corporate, this is a big growth area. How many of you shop at Costco? Well, we all do, all right? Have you seen the 4-pound jar of Jelly Belly in Costco? It's the cheapest in the world. But Costco has been a great customer. We've been selling them for over 25 years, and our corporate sales force is dedicated to working directly with them to grow that part of our business. And we've got some new products here. Fruit snacks that you've seen Mr. Jelly Belly on is one of those items, and they're looking for other flavor mixes all the time. So we had, with our corporate accounts division, we call them Target, Costco, Walmart, Trader Joe's, and et cetera. Product innovation. How do we approach that? Well, we live it and breathe it every day. It's not something that we just think of or set time aside to think of. It's something that's part of every conversation that we have. And Jelly Belly, believe it or not, this is important. This is in a trade magazine that ranked relevancy and perception. Now, here we are ranked 54th in the world in terms of our sales, but in terms of brand recognition, we're 6th. So obviously we've leveraged our brand and the assets that we have very effectively if everybody out there perceives Jelly Belly to be as big as some of our competition. And I think that's key to what we've done and key to what we continue to do. And we'll talk a little bit about how we support the brand and how we make that possible. What do we do to leverage ourselves in such a way that we appear to be that a big of a player in a sea of many, many billions of dollars that some of these companies come to represent. When we develop a product, where do ideas come from? Everywhere. And that's what's important to understand. We are open to talking to anybody at any time about anything new. And it's part of our culture. It's what we do. I mean, it's something that we live and breathe every day. But we have gotten some of the greatest ideas that have come from our vendors, that have come from suppliers, that have come from retailers. I mean, you cannot imagine that everybody has got a great idea about Jelly Belly. And how do you mine that and really take what is relevant or what could be an effective new product idea? Well, you have to have the ability to understand that that's just what we do. And I think that because it's so fully integrated and part of all of our functional areas of the business, that we never shut anybody out. I mean, if somebody in distribution comes over and says, I got this great idea, or so-and-so, we listen. We are open to it. We may have heard it 16 times already, somebody beat them to it, and usually that's the case by now, but we're always open, and we encourage that dialogue. And so that's how we have got some of the best ideas that have come to us, because we're open to those suggestions. And I think that's what Herm has instilled in our culture, is that that's how they survived all those years, was by listening and creating something new. And that's the only thing that helped them survive until Jelly Belly came along. And guess what? How did Jelly Belly happen? It was an idea of one of our distributors. This guy was out there selling our other candy and had this great idea. And then Herm was smart enough to buy the logo and the brand from him later on, but that's how it all happened. Harry Potter is, does everybody know Bertie Bott Beans? You have them in your deal? So it's a fun story. When they came to us with this idea and they said, we want you to make vomit. We know you can do it, right? Yeah, we said, yeah, we can do that. We can do anything. And that's what Jelly Belly has come to represent. We can knock off any flavor exactly. When you break open vomit and you smell it, it's the real deal, right? Why that's relevant for you is because we've had a great run with Harry Potter for 6 years now, but now that license is over and done, and we've moved on to something else. So we've taken a concept, because what feedback we got about it was from the kids. It's the gross thing. It was not just novel. It is very sustainable all those years, and there's something about tricking your friends into trying something that's gross, right? So voila, we came up with the next new idea. This is Bean Boozled. And Bean Boozled we launched at the largest domestic trade show in Chicago back in June. And Bean Boozled is what it means. It says, caution, contains weird and wild flavors. So this is how it works. You've got, these are some of our top flavors, right? Licorice, top banana, berry blue, peach. Now, these are some of our weird flavors. Skunk spray, pencil shavings, rotten egg, moldy cheese, baby wipes. Unused. Black pepper. How do we do that? Why do we do that? I'm telling you, this is the deal. So on the back of the box, you can see. Now, this is taking that idea that came from the kids that were grossing each other out and taking it to one step farther. So, do you have pencil shavings or top banana in my hand? Do you have caramel corn, or is this really moldy cheese? You can't tell them apart until you eat them. So, we dare you, right? We were slammed. I mean, there was such an interest in this product from the buyers, from all of the major retailers at our show. The PR we got from this across the networks that routinely come to All Candy Expo. It was phenomenal. But they come to expect that from us. When they want something that's new and cutting edge and fun and relevant, Jelly Belly is where the media comes to first. Sport beans. Where did this idea come from? Where did it come from? Liz knows. She probably was as much to do. It's been a secret of long-distance runners for a lot of years. They used to put Jelly Bellies in their waistband for a little sugar, a little carbohydrate, and it just gave them just enough of an edge as they're out there on their run, to carry them through so they wouldn't bonk. Our pro cycling team came to us year one when they started with us and said, why don't you make those big make these big jelly beans? Because we use these. We drink our diet, or we drink our Cokes, and we have our other sources, but we can't get enough carbohydrate out on the run. And they said, we hate all that other crap, that goo and gel and all that stuff that's sticky and it's messy. So they're the ones that said, create something. So we said, well, we make a pectin bean. And pectin is a natural source, so it worked better, has more flavor. And we used, a real essence of lime and lemon and orange. And they loved the taste and the flavor that they got back. But we thought we were on to something here. So early on in the game, as we were messing with this formula, we thought, you know, we're candy makers. This is a fitness nutrition product. We need to do this right, and we need to hire some help. And I introduced myself to Liz, and we had a contact here through UC Davis, and we started a dialogue and hired her to help consult with us, and that's the beginning of Sport Beans. And what's happened since then has been really phenomenal. These are some of the packages that we've got in the marketplace today. We've got four. We have four flavors. Fruit Punch, which you all have in your bags today, so we want you to try these. Lemon Lime, Berry Blue, Orange, and two new caffeine, the Extreme Sport Beans that have caffeine, and Liz was instrumental in helping us with that, too. We needed credibility. We were entering this is different. We're not selling candy to the supermarkets here. We're selling a fitness nutrition product to a nutrition buyer at Target who knows everything about the category. And we needed credibility. We needed, first of all, to understand, was this product truly effective? Was it as effective as a competitive set? And if it was, we needed to prove it. And so in consulting with Liz, that's how we came on the idea of doing clinical testing. Little did we know at that time that I think that Gatorade is the only product that competes in that category who had done any clinical testing. The goos and the gels had not. But we were bound and determined to prove to everyone that this was a viable product, and it was its benefits were at least as effective as everybody else's. So we did the test here at UC Davis at the sports lab, and we did have a product that tested as least as effective in all the categories of measurement. And so that gave us what we needed, the credibility. And so since then, we've seen the product continue to grow, and we owe that a lot to Liz and her time involved with that. Right, Liz? That's a real recent picture, isn't it? Well, the Sport Beans story got not President Reagan to endorse it, but the PR folks love this idea. We've been on the big idea with Danny Deutsch and some of these other Wired publications, the top 10 new best things that are happening out there, and it's a very cool brand because it's in a bean shape. The product itself is not anything new. It's just the delivery mechanism. It happens to be in a bean-shaped form, which gives it a very competitive positioning. It's not sticky. It's not gooey. It's portable. It's transferable. We think it's a lifestyle product. If you can imagine, where was Gatorade way back when, and where is it today? It's in every gym bag. Every soccer kid has it. I mean, it's all over every campus around. And not to say that we wanted to copy that. We had something that was better, and we really feel that way. We call Gatorade the liquid form of sport beans. So that was. I talked a little bit about fruit snacks. I want to talk about the evolution of a brand. When you introduce something, you know, always get it always right. And in this case, we were working with a retailer, Costco. Costco came to us, and this one we have on the left, and said, "We want a fruit snack unlike any others that's out there. We want real juice. We know you guys can do this." And they came and we developed this product together. And in your bags are fruit snacks. If you haven't tried these, this is really a unique product. We used to make fruit snacks way back when, but now today, these are something very different. And we use real fruit juice, and it's a process that we've refined years and years ago. You won't taste anything else like this out in the market. Costco knew this because we've been selling Jelly Belly there. They wanted great true-to-life flavor, and they wanted a product that had a certain mouthfeel and a certain percentage of fruit juice, real fruit juice used. And that's what fruit snacks are. And this has been out in the market for a year. They've come back to us and they've said, you know, we're off to a pretty good start, but we can do better. And so we reformulated, just tweaked the formula just a little bit, up the size and the graphics. And it changed from Mr. Jelly Belly on a skateboard to more of an upscale appeal, more of a premium look, and certainly more natural and health benefit conscious folks would gravitate to that type of a package, because that's the moms that are shopping for this or what they're looking for. And so it's not a kid's product anymore. And so this is what you're looking at is something that you'll see in the stores the first part of next year. But it's something that we're very pleased with, that we've developed this to the next level, and I think that the results will speak loudly once it gets on the shelves. So what else do we do? Sometimes you go acquire something that already exists out there. For the same reason we loved the idea of fruit snacks, we think Sunkist brand has some equity in that brand with the healthier for you connotations. This company, Ben Meyerson, who had the license for that, we acquired back in November of last year. So acquisitions do work, and in this case where we have co-branded with Jelly Belly, this is a product that we think that it's been under a curtain. They had manufacturing limitations that didn't enable them to get in all classes of trade. You didn't see the fruit gems out there in hardly any places beyond a few select places because they just couldn't produce anymore. We have the manufacturing capability, and now we can take it and run with it. We think this has great potential, and as we go forward, we're going to focus on that. I think that, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about natural products in just a minute, but this is a segment of the confectionery business that we think is just earmarked for tremendous growth. You also have in your bag something that's new. Again, this comes directly from a retailer. Whole Foods came to us and says, we really want you to, we're not having much success in our confectionery business here. Maybe it's an oxymoron to say it's healthy candy, but in some ways the bag you have is made with no preservatives and no artificial colors. So colors derived from natural sources. And it is really Jelly Belly quality. And this is something, again, that we're open to, but with our reputation, our manufacturing capability, how do these things come to us? Well, they come to us because of what we've done in the marketplace. So we're starting to take the momentum that we've built and leveraging it, and new business is coming to us. You'll find these in Whole Foods in some of the markets here in Northern California. They're not in every store, but each month that goes by, we have another division that says, send them, we're ready. Soda Pop Shop. A little bit about co-branding. You know, we've had the Cadbury brand since our early days, when we decided that we needed a better root beer. Root beer was kind of a flavor. And we got the license for A&W root beer, and instantly it became a top 10 item. So there was some equity in A&W that was very transferable. Same thing with Dr. Pepper. So to take a very strong brand out there and from the makers of Jelly Belly and take the two brands and put them together, it is powerful if it's done correctly. And we think that we've done it correctly. Recently, Cadbury Schweppes came back to us and said they'd been after us for years. They said, take 7-Up, take Orange Grape Crush and Orange Crush and make a soda pop assortment. And they're begging us to, and we did. And I'll tell you, once it got on the shelves, it just really has, it's even impressed us. It just really is. Co-branding, if done correctly, can be a very effective strategy. Smoothie blend. I don't know if we put one of those in there, but this is another thing. I mean, it's on trend. Everybody loves the flavors, but these are really good. Combination of flavors to create something unique and different, and it has that wow factor. When you taste these, you go, wow, that really does hit it. And that's what we aim to do, and we've had, again, this all of a sudden started off with one of our mixes. It was like the fifth-ranked mix. It's now number 3, and it's moving up to be number 2 real soon because it's really popular. So that's some of the product innovation or what we've done and how we take ideas and take them to the next level. There are times when we're not successful. You can't have a winner every day. But if you're in an industry where it's highly, you know, impulse sales, and 30% of all sales are from new products, you need to be an innovator or you're going to fall behind and chase the market all the time. And that's what we do. We actually introduce more products into the market than M&M's, than Hershey's, than Nestle's. I mean, in the sugar category in 2006. So, and not all of them are winners, trust me. But I mean, that's what drove sales, that's what buyers were after, and that's what the consumer was looking for. So it's a very effective strategy. So what else do we do to support the brand the way we do? I mentioned the flavors before. The visitor center is probably one of the greatest strokes of genius you could have. Marketing your product directly to the consumer is the most powerful marketing that you can do. Every day and every way. This, our visitor center in Fairfield, California, want to guess how many folks run through there every year? Try 500,000. 500,000. 25,000 a day in the summertime. My daughter Allie worked as a tour guide, and in the retail store, she'll tell you what it was like working there in the summertime. It's crazy. And they're fanatics. So to be able to take and use some of your marketing dollars and spend it against direct consumer marketing is the most powerful way. We've actually built our brand that way in more grassroots ways, in non-traditional ways. And I want to demonstrate to you some of the other examples of how that works, too. It's amazing. And this is just like an everyday occurrence. So impressed were the folks at Reader's Digest that we were voted the best tour in America, the best factory tour in America. I think that's pretty awesome. And it was unsolicited. They came and visited. They did their score. And we didn't even know they were there. They just all of a sudden called us and said, "We chose you as the best tour in America. Congratulations." So, I mean, if you believe in something and do it correctly, and look at the experiences those people have. Look at all the impressions you can make from the time they pull up to that parking lot, see the signs, and walk in the doors, how many chances you get to make an impression. Eyes, ears, nose, in every way. And to me, that's the most powerful form of marketing that exists. But we do a lot of other things. You talk about brand awareness. Brand awareness is, if my boss could have 50 blimps up in the city at all times, we would probably do that in bean shape, of course. But we'll put our logo on anything and everything, and we spread it around. So we get into different lifestyle segments, different forms of recreation, different interests, different hobbies, and that's how it's so viral. Why do you see Jelly Belly everywhere? It's because we try to be everywhere and in every way, and we do it from the very low-level regional programs up to national programs. So you see NASCAR there and drag racing, but we do it in other ways too. So these are just some examples of how we take and leverage the brand and get the brand recognition back. Our cycling team has been phenomenal. We've sponsored the National Triathlon Training Camp. It's headquartered in Sacramento. It's a men's and women's competitive triathlon team this year, helped promote Sport Beans. But that's been phenomenal. And we've had phenomenal success in taking a brand like Sport Beans, and that's the audience we want to speak to, competitive athletes, and it's really worked for us. So our sponsorships continue to pay big dividends, and we use it to touch so many people out there and so many of the events that they participate in. We have a thing for motorsports, too. Motorcycles, we do, on the right is the guy that pilots our P-51 plane, Brandt, and the Reno Air Show. That's when we bring all of our stuff, Mr. Jelly Belly and the trailer and everything to these events. We really make a statement. We've got rodeo. There's the P-51. That's Sparky down in the left-hand corner. That was up in the Reno Air Races. You know why they call it Sparky? Because when trying to try to land it without the landing gear down. So that's how Sparky got its nickname. But we've got biplanes and different things that we've sponsored over the period of time. It's a lot of fun. And Jelly Belly on Tour. We've got we go to events all around the country. I think we're probably going to get another bus real soon because this is really effective. We go support these events, state fairs, grand openings. We interface with our customers. If a retailer has a big grand opening, they want Mr. Jelly Belly there, our costume characters, our inflatables, or the bus, we accommodate them, and that's how we support them in doing what they need to do, and it builds strong relationships. We'll wrap anything, like I said before. These are some examples. We didn't put everything there. Water taxis, London cabs. Those two guys in London, because our distributor hired them and wrapped their vehicles, those are the two most popular cab rides in all of London. Some more of our planes and motorcycles. The top motorcycle, Herm has a thing for motorcycles, so we bought that for him as a surprise for his 60th birthday. And it's bad to the bean is what it says on the back of that. You would be amazed. That sits in the lobby at the visitor center, and we cordon it off. people want their picture taken with it. It's pretty powerful stuff. And these are our Sport Bean bikes, lemon, lime, and orange. And we take those to trade shows, and it's amazing what they attract. A little bit about our advertising. Again, it's all supportive of the brand in so many ways. Smoothie, I think it's So Smoothie, and we do the little blender thing coming out. So Delicious, which is great, music to your mouth. These are just some of the consumer and trade ads that we do. But what I'm really proud of is not the ads themselves. We do them. Our creative services department. This is something that you all will wonder is, how do you do what you do? What is your strategy? How do you get speed to market? How do you get things done? We do them ourselves. And that's something I think that years ago, everybody outsourced creative services. I'll use that as an example. When I started Jelly Belly, we had one person in creative service. I think we're up to 14 now. We do all of our own packaging design. We do all of our POP materials. All of our creative is done in-house. And I'll tell you, it is very, very effective when you want to get something done in a hurry. And you want to work directly with a retailer or a special project or initiative. You can't beat that. There's a cost to doing that. Trust me, there's a big cost to doing that. But the return is so much bigger. If you're an innovator and you're out there trying to get new products to market, there is no better way. These are some of our Sport Beans ads. We leverage our own properties. This is our cycling team and our triathlon team in our trade ads and consumer ads. I think that sends such a powerful message. We don't pay a dime to do these ads other than the photography to shoot them. But they're created by us, and it makes us, it's something that we, I think, has set us apart from everybody else, because we find our own niche in that area. Even on TV, Get Real, Get Jelly Belly, they're little 10-second shots, but the fruit turns into a jelly belly bean and vice versa. It's just it's clever, and it's done, and it supports what we're all about. And so even the agency we work with to create this, we couldn't do it ourselves, but we kind of did it cheap because we don't have that kind of a budget, but it's very effective. And we have an advertising agency, but they mostly do our media buys. We do all of our own ads, and we create them in-house, and we use ideas from everywhere to do them, and I'm real proud of that. These are some of the promotions that we do behind the brand, and I think that's another important leg of the support behind the brand is, how do you interact? And promotions can be much more effective as advertising than, as you all well know. And we do it on the internet, and we're learning as we go. But we used to outsource this, but now we do it all in-house. And so we're getting much better at it. We're finding ways that the metrics that we get back when we measure the effectiveness of these programs, and we're just getting, building a better return on our investment and a more viable promotion each and every year. And it does matter. It matters to not only the retailer and to the consumer, but it helps set us apart from all the competition. Merchandising. I think that everybody needs to know that when you have a new product and you present it to a buyer, what's the first question that they ask? How am I going to display this? Where am I going to put this, right? It's always a big deal. We designed what we feel are state-of-the-art fixtures to go into lots of classes of trade, supermarkets and whatnot, that can handle a myriad of merchandise problems or provide solutions for. We can do bulk, if you look on the top up here. We can do packaged in every configuration. But in any event, it is just, it screams our brand. So the effectiveness of merchandising cannot be understated. And what you can do in the stores, I mean, it's real. These are some other examples. And we design our merchandising for the classes of trade, specifically. And so on the left, you'll see a specialty hutch rack that would go in some of our specialty stores. And these are for supermarkets and other non-conventional classes of trade that need spinner racks, from car washes to you name it. Here's an example of a candy store that had just plexiglass bins. Nothing really magical about it, nothing to draw your attention to it. And you can see by up here, we were averaging about 200 pounds of bulk Jelly Belly every 2 weeks. So they said, well, let's try your fixture. And so what happened? 3X, tripled sales. And so the power of the brand and how it's used effectively in merchandising is done great things for us, and that's why our sales have continued to grow in what was an older, mature channel of retail. Some of these candy stores have been around forever, and boom. And we do other things with marketing. Bean Art is something that's a lot of fun. Those of you who've been on the tour have seen the demonstration, but it's a new media that's been very fun. We have 50 original pieces, and we use them. We send them to retailers when they have grand openings or special events, and the media loves these things. Again, it's all part and parcel to promoting the bean. I think this is one of the most ingenious things that we've done since I've been there. And where did this idea came from? Actually, it came from an employee that said, you know, I just ate a lemon and a coconut, and it tasted just like lemon meringue pie. How can that be? And voila, recipes, all of a sudden, just a combination of flavors together. But they had to be real. So we started experimenting with taking different flavors and doing different things. It is so much fun. So in your bags, you do have a little recipe guide, and you've got a little 10-flavor gift box. Try it. See if it doesn't work. I'm sure many of you had. But when you want to do something uniquely different, This is a protectable trade rights that we own. This is an idea from an IP standpoint that matters, and we've been able to do that. We've been able to trademark and own IP rights to that idea. Licensing. We just met with our agency today. It's been a while since we did that. We signed on with TLC, who is a manager, a global manager of our brand and brand extensions. We've now registered in 14 categories in 40 countries. We're getting into brand extension in a big time. And we took our time before we went down this path because it was very important that whoever we worked with took very special care of our brand. We have total approval processes involved in anything that's developed for any product line in any category. And these are just some examples of what's been going on. And that'll be a growing business for us over the next few years. We're collecting royalties, but we're also building brand awareness and brand loyalty in categories like fashion and home and some of these other categories that where flavors are used in the food product lines have the phenomenal thing. If you look at this next one, you see these Bundt cakes on the left-hand side with Jelly Belly flavors. We worked with a flavor company, and we drove them nuts because they had to hit it just right. We were not going to let them do anything until they took blueberry and really made it Jelly Belly blueberry, and or very cherry. It had to smell like it and taste like it, and we hit it, and they did. And these cakes, I think they sold. At Walmart, they had a promotion here a couple of weeks ago. They finally got on the shelf over there, and they want to do another one. It just flew off the shelf. So it's the power of the brand. Who would have thought Bundt cakes? But really, it's a promise that we make. If that says Jelly Belly, it's got to deliver, and it did, and it does. And so we think brand extensions in many of these ways will make a big difference. I mean, it's a little sushi bag, believe it or not, on the lower right-hand side. In Japan, it's the hottest thing going on. Who would have thought that? They have to have a little bag with handles for their sushi. It's like, amazing. In conclusion, I just wanted to say that this is some of the company philosophy that sort of drives us. And some of the collection things that I have in my head as I've been there and learned about our culture and what we do. A brand is a promise. And never break that promise to the consumer. Never compromise quality. And that's we do it every single day in every way. We fight the urge to use a cheaper ingredient, to take a shortcut, to do something different. We would lose. That's a slippery slope. Don't go down there. When you're a premium position brand, as we are, you cannot take that course. And we feel that very strongly about that. We talk about it all the time, and we're committed to never taking shortcuts. And when we say do the right thing or do things right, I mean, that's every day. There's only one way to do it, and it's do it the right way. So again, it gets back to supporting this notion of never compromise quality. I've never been part of an organization that works so hard to take something that's about 96% perfect to make it 97 or 98% perfect. But that's what you got to do. You have to live that. What can you do to make it better? It's not quite good enough. It's never quite good enough. That's the attitude you have to have for any product that you develop. Because if it's okay, it's not going to do okay in the marketplace. Include everyone. That's what I love about our company is that everybody's opinion matters. And everybody, no matter what they do, has an opportunity to contribute. We have employee meetings 3 times a year. I sit and stand in front of every one of them, and we let them ask questions. And we show them the direction and provide them information and give them the avenue to provide feedback. And that's just not at meetings. That's in every day. When we walk the plant, we talk to people. They're empowered to tell us what they think. Everyone is included. No one is excluded. And I think that that's a powerful way to open the lines of communication. We're all in this together, so when I say check your ego at the door, to me it means, you know, if the owner of the company sees a mess on the floor and is willing, he doesn't ask somebody to clean it up. He cleans it up himself. If something is broken, he stops and fixes it. And that's the attitude we all have. And I think that's what makes a good companies great when they adopt that kind of an attitude. And we don't rest too much on what we've done. It's what we're working on and what we're going to do that's really important. And so we don't celebrate a lot of the things because we're already down the road working on the next best thing. And I think that's what drives us, you know, and keeps us looking forward. We don't spend much time looking in the rearview mirror. I don't think that that's very effective. And if you got to choose, you're going to lead or you're going to follow. And if you're going to lead, then I think that's the thing you need to adopt. And I'm proud of this. Is something when I moved from Raley's over to the confectionery business, the candy business, I knew nothing about manufacturing. The first thing I did was half of every day, I went and did every single job in the factory, every single job, and that including the janitor's work and loading candy and every functional area of the business. And I was so impressed with everybody that worked in those areas, how proud they were of what they contributed. I said, this has got to be for everybody. So I went to Herman and said, it's a great idea. Anybody that we hire has to go through Jellyville University. So how do we convey all those impressions and expectations we have of anybody new? How do they feel part of our culture? Well, we take them aside, we make the time, and we show them. And I think that the people that train our new employees out there, that are our Jelly Belly instructors, if you will, our teachers, have the most pride in what they do because they wear that hat, and it means a lot to them. And everybody that does go through there gets a diploma. So it's not quite UC Davis, but it's pretty good for us. So I hope you enjoyed. I hope that enlightened you somewhat.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.